Side on all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Here we go, folks. It is Sunday, November the 29th, 2020, and you are listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks. We are back again, folks. It's much to your surprise as it is to me. I didn't know that I was ever going to do this again, and after doing it the first two times, again, returning, I didn't know that I would be doing it again, but yet here we are doing it again. Hope that you all had a good Thanksgiving holiday, and I'd just like to take this opportunity to express my own thanks and gratitude to the many friends that I have made over the years, and who still I consider to be good friends, people who have taught me a lot, who have stood by me during all of the years that I have been involved in this nonsense, all of this political nonsense. And I think that that idea, folks, can be expanded, into all of us being grateful for what we have, because clearly, as events prove, not just on a daily basis, but on a minute-by-minute basis, the world is spiraling out of control, and there's no telling what the state of the world is going to be 5 days from now, 5 months from now, 5 years from now, not even 5 minutes from now, because that's how quickly things change now. And why it is important for us at all times to count our blessings and to be grateful for the good things that we do have. And then, of course, to in appreciation of those good things, to do what's necessary in order to preserve them. And even, God willing, to augment them, to multiply them. And I think that that this is something that that can be done. I think it's a possibility. I think it's not just a possibility. I think it's a very real reality that we can take 2 and turn it into 4, and 4 and turn it into 8, and 8 into 16, and on, provided that we do it correctly, folks. This is unfortunately one of the problems that we have to deal with in this world that we live in today, this instant gratification world, which is people think that all that is necessary is just to throw the seed on the ground or throw the seed to the wind, and in no time at all you're going to have this beautiful garden, whether it's flowers or vegetables or whatever, without doing any of the very careful prep work that is necessary in order to make sure that those seeds indeed do sprout and grow and flourish to their logical conclusion, which is the harvest. And unfortunately, this is a bad habit that proliferates, I guess is the word I would use, and especially, especially in this internet age, age in which we live, where people think that by virtue of something being said and something being published, that therefore it's true. And of course, this is certainly not the case at all, and anybody with just a few functioning brain cells can see how bad habits such as this can be utilized by the very people who are out to destroy our lives, destroy our world, and to get us running around in circles. And the reason I bring this up, folks, is because, in the last two programs, I promised you that I wasn't going to spend a whole lot of time complaining about, you know, the quote-unquote movement, whatever we want to, whatever that word encompasses, you know, that big tent, you know, the movement that sprung up in the aftermath of 9/11, and then it, you know, it kind of separated into different little groups and different little parts. You know, the only connecting thread of all of them being that they are discontent about the current circumstances, and that there's another side of the story concerning all of it that hasn't been told. And as I have said on the previous two programs, I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it, but there is one thing that I want to say about it right now, and I ask that you consider very carefully excuse me, the words that I'm going to say. Our good friend Stash, he has a website, a blog over on WordPress, and writes some very good material, very good insight into things. He appeared on this program some time ago before the website was shut down, and all of the material that was contained therein was, basically just sent off into oblivion. And as of late, he's been commenting quite a bit on this situation involving the quote-unquote truth movement. And he has basically nailed it, and with regards especially to how this quote-unquote movement has handled the events of the last 4 years involving a certain Donald J. Trump. And I think very accurately he said, you know, they have blown it, and they have basically become the very monster, or at least part of that very monster, a tentacle on that monster that they ostensibly claim to be fighting against. And I think that that is exactly the truth. And I would just like to expand upon that idea here in saying that, you know, this movement, however we want to, whatever we want to call it, however we want to, the criteria we want to use in describing it and, you know, what it encompasses, it has become just a small, very, very small neighborhood, really just a cul-de-sac, if we want to be accurate about it, a cul-de-sac within that bigger community known as the Deep State. And, you know, this causes me a lot of pain to have to say this, folks, because for many years, as those of you who followed my work know, you know, I was very much a part of that quote-unquote movement. You know, I wrote for American Free Press newspaper. I did a program, several programs on RBN. I did all sorts of interviews with, you know, all sorts of characters and creatures right now who are part of that quote-unquote movement. And now I've come to the point where I regret all of it. I regret almost entirely all of the associations that I maintained during those days, and due completely to the fact that they have now demonstrated, for the most part, the fact that they have, as I stated before, that this thing that I was part of has now morphed into just a part of this bigger creature known as the Deep State. Now, people say, "What do you mean by this?" Well, again, taking into account the person and the presidency of Donald J. Trump, and taking into account the political earthquakes that we have all witnessed now for the last, 4+ years, 5 years actually, since Trump announced that he was going to seek the presidency, we see what the Deep State did through its control of the media, through its through the bad characters within the U.S. intelligence community and within the U.S. military. We look at all of these things that happened, and they were done deliberately in order to remove the person from the presidency. And then we we do a compare and contrast between what the larger deep state did and then what the quote-unquote movement did. And to a large extent, folks, maybe they're not running in perfect parallel to each other. Maybe they collide, those two lines collide briefly here and there over certain issues. But in general, when you look at a lot of these people and a lot of these outlets, and you see what they have done to contribute to that arson that was deliberately set to destroy the person in the presidency of Donald J. Trump. A lot of people, whether it is the Iranian media, whether it's the pro-Palestinian people, whether it's the anti-war people, the pro-peace people, the anti-Zionist people. And then, of course, you've got weirdos like Jeff Rentz. And yes, he is a weirdo, folks. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. you have all of these people who, rather than stepping back and looking at the big picture and plugging into this, the possibility that maybe they don't have all the information to make a judgment call on the situation with 100% accuracy. Like, for example, Trump and his decision to bomb the empty Syrian airfield. My God, the screeching campaign that erupted in the aftermath of that. Despite the fact that, at least as far as I know, nobody was killed. It didn't start World War III, as many of these people were predicting. It was a very quick and theatrical thing that Trump did. And in the process of doing that, he got all sorts of applause from the very corners of people, political people, whose support he needed in order to stay in office. Okay. And yet, if we remember, folks, if we go back in time and we look at the reaction on the part of our people to this, it was head to the basement because World War III has started. Head to the basement. This is it. It's all over with. Trump has just shown his colors. The Jewish lobby put him into office in order to get this war started. And then a big nothing burger, right? That's a, I shouldn't use that phrase because I see too many commentators of the Hebraic persuasion working for the deep state media who like to use that word. And then it was just instance after instance after instance. And there's been no accounting. There's been no report card. There's been no progress report. And even now, folks, as literally we are facing a situation that is unprecedented in our lives, and really the only thing that begins to come close to it is what took place between 1861 and 1865 with the war between the states. This is unprecedented. This is uncharted territory, okay? And yet all of these people, all of these various creatures of various stature within this big umbrella known as the quote-unquote movement, many of whom now are saying, oh, the Jews are against Trump. The Jewish lobby, they must have turned on him here in just the last couple of weeks. No, folks. They were against him from the very beginning. And if these people had bothered to do the responsible homework and the responsible research and study, they would have seen from the very beginning, that the very same people who brought us 9/11, who brought us Desert Storm, who brought us the war in Iraq, the war on terror, the very same people who put that souffle together for the world to eat were the very same people, the neocons, Bill Kristol, Max Boot, Charles Krauthammer, Elliot Cohen, Jennifer Rubin, the Kagan brothers, David Froom, all of these creatures whose only reason for existing is to push forward what is considered to be the best interests of Israel, as dictated specifically by Benjamin Netanyahu and Likud, but in a bigger sense from the entire political class altogether in Israel. These very same creatures, folks, were absolutely 666% opposed to, first, the nomination to the Republican ticket on the part of Trump, secondly, to his election, and then, over the course of the last 4 years since his election, they have not wasted a single day, folks. The math on that, 365 days a year times four is about 1,500 days. The last 1,500 days, every one of those creatures that I just listed, who brought us 9/11 and the war on terror, the clash of civilizations, and all of the rest of that, for 1,500 days, each one of them, and then all the little sub-lieutenants that they have under them, have added their chorus to this wall of noise dedicated to the removal of Trump as president. Now, this is not a case of yes it is. It's a case of I told you so, but not in an egotistical or arrogant way. Okay. I'm saying this, folks, because, you know, the battle is still going on. Okay. It hasn't been lost yet. A lot has been lost, for sure. A lot. And there is no reason for us to expect that we are going to get through this storm that we are in the middle of right now, and that there isn't going to be a lot more destruction to come, because it is coming. However, the battle is not over, okay? And there is still a lot to be salvaged from this that can be used to build on later. And that is why I am calling upon all of you out there listening to this program that you need to, for the sake of everything, I mean, forget about for the sake of people living 1,000 miles away or 10,000 miles away or whatever. For the sake of the people living within your four walls and under your roof, even if it's just you and your cat, for the sake of that, we, all of us, need to be absolute fanatics about our accuracy. We don't have the luxury of going full auto with our weapons and adopting the spray and pray tactic of engaging in the enemy. Years ago when I did the program, I sometimes would start the show off with that sound bite from the movie The Patriot. I know it's kind of a cheesy movie, but it had a really good scene in it when Mel Gibson and his two boys, they go off to ambush this patrol of redcoats who have just taken Mel Gibson's older son as a prisoner, and they're going to hang him. And Mel Gibson tells his boys, and they had to, this was a strategy that absolutely had to be employed at that time, because they were only firing muskets, and in the best situation possible, a musket can only be fired and loaded three times a minute. If you were really good, maybe four times a minute, but generally speaking, after the fifth shot, the musket wouldn't fire anymore because it was so fouled, because, you know, they hadn't developed smokeless powder at that time. I apologize, folks, if I'm talking above, what other people, I know a lot about guns, okay, so if I'm talking here using a lot of terminology that you don't necessarily understand, trust me, look it up and you'll see that I'm right. Anyway, he tells his boys, Last thing he says, what did I teach you fellas about shooting? And they both say together, aim small, miss small. And that is the strategy that we have to adopt here, folks, with whatever time is left and with whatever resources are remaining for us while this thing is going on. And what that means is understand and listen very carefully to what I'm saying here. Understand that most of the old hangouts and haunts that were the best places to go, you know, in the quote-unquote movement, they are now mere extensions of the deep state. And the worst part is that most of the people running these sites don't even realize that that's the case. They don't even realize, even though it is as easy to see and easy to, you know, that the intellectual process involved in figuring that out is as easy as pouring water out of a pitcher while reading the directions on the bottom of it, okay? A lot of them don't even realize that the noise they are making does nothing except to contribute to the very problems which they claim to be fighting against. And so I am hereby calling on all of you out there within earshot of this program to completely disassociate yourself with these people. Okay? This has to be an either-or situation. Either they are contributing positively towards this fight and, you know, with most of their trigger pulls, you see an enemy soldier fall to the ground. Either they're doing that or they're doing nothing. And doing nothing means they are helping the enemy advance against us. So that's all I have to say today, folks, about that as far as the neighborhoods that we used to frequent. You need to understand that these people, and yes, I will specifically state people like Alex Jones, people like Jeff Rentz, you know, a whole host of kooks out there who do not understand, who do not possess the minimum, forget about the intelligence. This is just the common sense. They don't possess the common sense necessary to take the noose off of their own neck. And if they don't possess that common sense to take the noose off of their own neck, then they don't have the common sense to take the noose off of yours. Now, a little programming note. We probably will be getting together on Sundays, folks, just like it was before, the good old days. Sundays is just a good day for me. I don't know why, but it's just a good day to do it, and that's how I plan to do it, hope to do it. I have gotten a few emails from people wanting to know how they can help out with the costs associated with putting this program together and rebuilding the website after 15 years of work, and just send me an email at the Ugly Truth Radio Program, that's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program, at gmail.com, and I will point you in the right direction to where you can contribute online towards the costs involved in this. Okay, so folks, those of you who are new to the program, the introduction to the show, there are two very important parts to it. The first one I'll deal with quickly because it's the less important of the two, although it's not unimportant at all, as you'll hear in a second, is the theme song from the radio program that our good friend, our departed brother Mike Piper did for many, many years. And, you know, I was a very, very close colleague of Mike. He lived in my home for 5 years, or I'm sorry, 5 months, before he unfortunately was called home to God. And for many years before that, we worked together very closely. In fact, I worked closer with Mike than I did anybody else, and if he were here, I think he would probably say the same. We talked on a daily basis. We were always talking politics, and I'm confident that if Mike were here today, at least 99% of the things that I say and have said regarding the situation with Trump, he would agree with. And I say that because I can state for my own perspective that it's only because of the teaching and the mentorship from being around Mike for so long that I developed this this ability to see deeper into this thorny issue involving Trump and the Jews. It's only because of that. And so in honor of Mike, and also in making it clear that this is basically a continuation of his work, my program and the website is a continuation of his work. He handed me the baton, and I am going to run with it for as long and as far as I can. And so that song that appears at the beginning and at the end of the program is basically Mike's signature, his seal of approval. And I'm sure that from his lofty perch in heaven, that he is looking down upon this with a big fat cigar in his mouth, and he is somewhat pleased. Anyway, but more important than the music itself, folks, is that soundbite that appears right before the music starts. Now, that is an extremely important soundbite, folks. And the reason that it is because our person here of the non-Gentile persuasion named Douglas Rushkoff, he was speaking at some gathering, and he basically has laid out the problem that the entire world, in his own words, folks, the entire world, faces as a result of this tiny, statistically insignificant group of people and the amount of power that they have accumulated for themselves. And the power itself is not the problem, folks. Power is never the problem. A loaded gun, which you have in your hands at that point, is power. And in the hands of the right person, a loaded gun can be an instrument of good. If that loaded gun is in the hands of the wrong person, somebody who is mentally ill or mentally deficient or just plain old rotten to the core, then that power, as manifested in that gun, can be a bad thing. Well, in this case involving Rushkoff's statement, where he says, the thing that makes Judaism so dangerous, and he says to everyone, to every creed, to every people, he said, is that we, not some of us, we, meaning the followers of Judaism, smash things that aren't true. He says, we don't, I'm going off the top of my head here, folks, we don't believe in the idea of, I think he said, nation states, or of these individual gods. He said, these are artificial constructions, and Judaism teaches us this. And he says, in a sense, our detractors, meaning the quote-unquote anti-Semites, have us correct in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the, I can't remember what he said, the beliefs of all peoples because they're not true or they're not real. Okay, so this wasn't David Duke, this wasn't Mark Glenn, this wasn't Jonathan Azaziah or any of the other, the quote-unquote great anti-Semites that have appeared over and over again on websites run by the ADL and some of these other groups who are, for all intents and purposes, just spies for Israel. This is from a guy of the non-Gentile persuasion, basically saying the exact same thing that has been said about this group of people for about 6,000 years. Okay? They are a corrosive force. They do not believe in live and let live. They do not believe in the freedom of religion or the freedom of conscience. And if you happen to be a particular person who embraces a religion or a political system or a philosophy or a way of behavior that they have deemed not true, then they are going to smash it, in the words of Rushkoff. They are going to smash it. And interestingly enough, folks, you know, Rushkoff, in that statement, is basically just borrowing from the text, which I utilize quite a bit in my commentary and things that I write on the website, that commentary from the book of Deuteronomy, not from the Talmud, folks, not from the Talmud, from the Torah, the Old Testament. It's been sitting there for thousands of years as an open secret, an open conspiracy against the non-Hebraic, non-Israelite, non-Jewish world. In that particular passage of Deuteronomy, it says, when you, I'm paraphrasing here off the top of my head, when you enter into the land that the Lord has given you, then you shall slaughter everybody there, leave nothing alive that breathes. And he says, you shall break down their altars and smash, you know, everything that is there. Okay, so that's exactly what Rushkoff is saying here. He is saying, whether he realizes it or not, he's basically just parroting what has been the operating system of Judaism for 6,000 years, or however long it's been since that horrible book known as the Torah, the Old Testament, was written. And that's an important thing that we have to keep in mind, folks, because, you know, I have run into a lot of screeching and complaining and castigations and condemnations and all the rest of that from a whole assortment of people, most of them, unfortunately, of the Christian variety, who say, you can't say that, you can't believe that. The Old Testament is just as holy as the New Testament that features the words of Jesus Christ in red letters. To which I say, no, that is completely wrong. That fallacy, that error of logic there, is precipitated and based entirely upon the fact that people have forgotten the fact that this is just a book. B-O-O-K, book. That's what the word Bible means in Greek, Biblia, book. Okay? It didn't fall out of the sky like a meteor. Nobody saw a giant hand descending out of the clouds, pointing to the ground, and then there's a bolt of lightning and that this book appears. Okay? It's a book. It's a book written by people. People with prejudices and their own issues, their own mental issues, their own, it's just a book. Now, there happened to be, in my opinion, there happened to be certain things about that book, beginning with the New Testament, that have some good things in it, especially the words and the teachings of Jesus Christ. But everything before that is a problem. Everything before that is the source of that corrosive force that literally is devouring our world and our lives. And folks, again, I hate to sound like one of these doomsday prophets, but they're just getting warmed up. Now, this is important for several reasons, not the least of which is that part of that strategy of aim small, miss small means that if we really, really do take this very serious situation as seriously as circumstances demand, meaning life and death, if we really do take it seriously, with the seriousness that is required here. That means we have to go back to the beginning of the affair. You know, any time there is a crime that has been committed, you know, such as a murder or something like that, the police, the detectives who are tasked with investigating this, they try as much as possible to go back to the very beginning in order to paint this picture and create this profile of the person who's responsible, of what happened and who's responsible for doing it. You can't just walk in and say, oh, okay, well, here's our victim. She suffers from a gunshot wound to the head and she's got a gun in her hand. Case closed. She killed herself. No. Maybe she didn't. Maybe he or she didn't commit suicide. Maybe somebody came in, killed them, put the gun in their hands, and made it look like they killed themselves. Okay. Now, in this case, folks, what we are required to do, those of us at least who understand the severity, not the seriousness necessarily, folks, but the severity of the situation that we all face right now, those of us who understand that severity know that in order to really, if we want to kill this vampire, we're not going to accomplish this by stomping on his toes or smashing his finger in the car door or, take your pick. You're going to have to get in close with the wooden stake and the hammer, and you're going to have to drive it through his heart. And the beating heart of this corrosive force that is destroying everything, folks, it's not just Donald Trump. It's not just the Middle East. It's everything. You know, this is one of the biggest complaints I have about these idiot white nationalist types. You know, everything is an anti-white conspiracy, okay? They think just like the Jews do, that the world revolves around them and that anything that goes bad is done in order to hurt them without even taking into account all of the other people in the world whose gods, whose philosophies, whose religion, whose way of life, that they are just as much a target of that corrosive force as white civilization is. And there's no question about it. There is an anti-white conspiracy on the part of this corrosive force, but there's also an anti-black conspiracy. And there's an anti-Oriental conspiracy. What there is an anti-Gentile conspiracy. And that includes everybody who has chosen to live not as a corrosive force upon the world, but as a cooperative and what's another good word beginning with? A cooperative and helpful force on the world. So, folks, we find ourselves in the middle of this very serious situation, and I have chosen to focus on, at this particular moment, the situation involving Donald Trump. Now, I know I had a good conversation with our good friend, Jonathan Azaziah, the other day, and he said something that, I just laughed because it was funny. Really funny. I hadn't heard this particular phraseology before, and it just struck me as hilarious. And we were talking about everything that was going on, and Jonathan, who basically agrees with me on this issue when he says that the Jews do not like Trump, and they never did. That's the important thing. See, there is this perception now amongst all of these geniuses in the 9/11 truth movement and beyond that the Jews loved Trump and they put him into office, but now, suddenly, in the last couple of weeks or months, whatever, they've decided that they like Biden more. No, that's not true. If that were the case, there wouldn't have been an impeachment. There wouldn't have been the daily barrage deep state media propaganda against him. There wouldn't be the pandemic, for sure. We would not have had that pandemic. Anyway, Jonathan and I were talking about this, and by the way, folks, I can report to you the good news that Jonathan is planning to join the program sometime in the near future, as soon as I, you know, get everything up and running here, get out of first gear and into second gear, and hopefully by third gear he'll be able to jump on board. Anyway, we were talking about the whole phenomenon about the stupidity on the part of so many of these self-anointed geniuses and geopolitical analysts about the whole Trump situation. And, you know, Jonathan made it a point, you know, that, you know, you can give an accurate analysis of the situation that is going on right now without singing the praises of Donald J. Trump. And what he said was, and I apologize to all of the ladies out there in the audience, but Jonathan said, you know, what's wrong with these people who can't see the common sense in all this? He said, it's not like we're polishing Trump's his testicles, okay? I'm just going to use the medical term for it. We're not polishing his testicles here. We're just giving a cold clinical analysis of the situation in front of us, okay? Now, as far as that goes, folks, you know, I'm not here to polish the president's personal testicles or anything like that. And if somehow you read that into it, well, then I am truly sorry to hear that you are more driven by your emotions than you are by your reasoning and your ability to listen carefully and to think critically, okay? I always use this as an example in explaining how you can determine whether somebody listens well and thinks critically when you go up and you say to them, you father mucker, or you say it under your breath, father mucker, and they go, what? What did you just say? Well, I didn't say anything, father mucker. I didn't say what you think I said. You're reacting to something which you think you heard, but which in reality you didn't. And it is like that with the discussions that have taken place and will take place on this program. Okay, now, the fact is, folks, and I will say it unabashedly, right now, I support the president. I support just about everything that he's done, only in the sense that it was the only practical thing that could be done, including, and most importantly, his plans for, quote-unquote, peace in the Middle East. Do I like his ultimate peace deal that gives the Palestinians just a few slices of the loaf of bread that was theirs and stolen from them, all of which deserves to be returned to them? No. I don't like that. But the alternative to his ultimate peace deal is the continuation of the status quo, which is the Jews gobbling up all of historic Palestine and then moving on to other projects in creating their thousands of year old dream known as Greater Israel. This is the only thing that Trump can do right now, given the very desperate situation that we're facing. Now, some people say, well, why doesn't he just ABC? Why doesn't he just XYZ? Well, have you stopped to think for a moment that maybe he can't? Why doesn't he just tell the truth about 9/11? Okay, so that's what you would do, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, if you were president, you would tell the truth about 9/11. You would tell the truth about who really killed JFK. You would tell the truth about the USS Liberty and Oklahoma City and all of these other things. Now, have you thought about the secondary and the tertiary and the quartiary, I think that's the word, blowback that would come from that? Have you stopped to think about it? Have you stopped to think about the fact that there is a huge, huge percentage of the American people who love Israel, who love the Jews, more than they love their own country and more than they love Jesus Christ? And this particular group of people I'm talking about, of course, are the Christian fundamentalist, Christian Zionist types. They represent the biggest voting bloc in America. And any politician who wants to hold his office, who doesn't take that that very simple math into account, he ain't going to get into office. And if he gets into office and then decides to buck that, he ain't going to stay. So yes, folks, I support Donald Trump, and so far everything that he has done, only in the sense that his options have been extremely limited and that he really couldn't do much more than that. I've used this analogy, comparison, whatever, many times. You know, it's like you saying to yourself, boy, I think I'll make a nice big spaghetti and meatball dinner with Italian sausage and garlic butter bread and nice salad and everything else for dinner, okay, which happens to be my favorite meal, folks. That is my favorite meal. But then you go to the cupboard, and what do you see? You see a loaf of bread. You go to the refrigerator, and what do you see? You see some milk, and you see some butter. And you look on the counter, and you see, well, there's some salt and pepper. Guess what? That's all you've got? Guess what? No spaghetti and meatballs tonight. You're going to have milk toast. This is what, these are the parameters within which Trump has been forced to work in diffusing this bomb and preventing this quote-unquote corrosive force from finishing its job, what it intends to do. And this is a situation, okay, since now it's my turn now to get my digs in here. These people who complain about Trump not doing this and not doing that and not having the kind of frank discussion with the American people that a president could have and should have, part of the reason that he's not able to is because, as I've said, you know, the Jews and their control of the media, they have the president by the balls by virtue of the fact that they have 350 American citizens by their brains. Okay? They control how the people think, and because they control how the people think, political leaders going all the way up to the presidency, all the way up to the president, understand that they have to take that into account when they make their decisions. And here's where I get to put my digs in. One of the reasons that the president can't have that kind of intelligent conversation with the American people about issues such as this is because some of us, some of those among us, with their silly little websites and their stupid little podcasts and all of the rest of that, have gone out there and they have destroyed the credibility of anybody who comes forward trying to have a rational, intelligent, accurate discussion about that corrosive force. Whether it's the idiot neo-Nazis, the idiot white nationalists, the idiot Sandy Hooker crowd, all of these people who have just gone over the cliff in terms of the goofiness and the kookiness that they have put out there. They have destroyed the ability on the part of the rest of us who have, in the words of our good friend Mike Piper, who have been sticklers for details, okay, and people who have tried to engage in this thing in a responsible way. Okay. Now, I'm not overestimating the effect that our little group of people have had. But you know what? Especially now, with everything falling apart and people all over the country, you know, it's at their doorstep now. They want answers. They want to know why the country's in the shape that it's in. And they're going to the internet and they're looking around. Okay? These are people who would be ripe for bringing into the truth, into the light. And then what do they run into? They run into a goofball like Jeff Rentz and his website saying nobody died at Sandy Hook. No shooting took place. Or they run into a website, you know, featuring one of Jim Fetzer's stupid articles talking about, you know, the massacre that took place in Las Vegas and how nobody died and that the sounds of gunfire, now I'm not kidding here, folks, I'm not kidding here. He says that the sounds of the gunfire that was going off I think it was 60-something people were killed, that it was a tape recording being broadcast through speakers because it was a big concert, had 20,000 people or something in it. That's what they run into. So when you have people out there looking around for answers to these questions, and then they wind up on a weirdo site like Jeff Rentz, or take your pick, folks. This is the kind of nonsense they run into, and guess what now? They're going back to Fox News, they're going back to CNN and whatever, okay? And we pushed them in that direction. So those of you out there who say, why doesn't Trump do this and why doesn't Trump do that? Well, he can't. He can't. And part of the reason he can't, as small a statistic as that is, part of the reason he can't is because of the nutters in our family, our neighborhood, our community, who ruined the opportunity that we had to bring people along. Now, let's see, we're approaching an hour here, folks. I am going to play a soundbite here, extremely important soundbite. This soundbite is former Secretary of State James Baker III. He was Secretary of State for George H.W. Bush, and it was a speech at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. They have that every year, where all of these shameless politicians go to kiss the ring of La Cosa Nostra and beg for the blessings of this crime syndicate. James Baker didn't do that. Barely 4 months into George H.W. Bush's term as president, Baker goes, oh, I'm not even going to tell you what he said, folks. I'm just going to let him say it himself.
For Israel, now is the time to lay aside once and for all the unrealistic vision of a greater Israel. Israeli interests in the West Bank and Gaza, security and otherwise, can be accommodated in a settlement based on Resolution 242. Forswear annexation. Stop settlement activity. Allow schools to reopen. Reach out to the Palestinians as neighbors who deserve political rights.
And there you go, folks. That was none other than James Baker III, former Secretary of State for George H.W. Bush, speaking at AIPAC. And what he said, folks, the message that he delivered was the equivalent of an atomic bomb. An atomic bomb as far as Jewish power, as far as the Israeli lobby goes in America. Because what he is saying there is, look, all of this nonsense, this acid trip This religious base acid trip that you people have been on for 6,000 years of taking over the entire Middle East between the Nile and the Euphrates, it just isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen. We, meaning the Bush administration, intend to build walls here in order to cage and quarantine you from doing this thing because if we let you go forward with what you intend to do, it's going to be World War III. And we're not going to sit by and let it happen. You've got your little country there. Now it's time for you to give the land that you stole in 1967 back to its rightful owners. And for you to go over there and for them to go over here, and we're going to stabilize this situation. Well, I bring this into the discussion, folks, because as those of you know who have been following the website and the programs, I am neck deep. Actually, I'm eyebrows deep into this. Well, it started off as an essay, and then it turned into a bigger essay, and now it's a book. And it started off. My intention was to advance the thesis that the reason why there is all of this instability that we're dealing with right now involving Donald J. Trump is because he intends to succeed where his predecessors have failed with regards to bringing peace to the Middle East. And as I have done my research on this, going all the way back to Nixon, you know, if we want to be, you know, historically accurate about it, sticklers for details, you know, Kennedy was the first one, okay? Because he was going to prevent the creation of this monster that we have right now, known as AIPAC. He was going to force the forerunner of AIPAC, which was the American Zionist Council, to abide by federal law and to register as the agent of a foreign power, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which would have prevented it, made it illegal for it to collect and distribute funds to candidates. Okay, that was number one. Number two, because Kennedy stood in the way, as we know from Mike Piper's work, Kennedy stood in the way of Israel. He was trying to prevent Israel from developing nuclear weapons. Now, Kennedy said he wanted a nuclear-free Middle East, but I think the bigger unspoken concern that Kennedy and others had was that if the Jews get their hands on nuclear weapons, they're going to use them on the entire world, because this is what their religion talks about, that they have to smash things that aren't true. Anyway, this book that I have been writing, the thesis of which has been to isolate what the real source of all of this business involving Donald J. Trump is that he intends to finally build a cage around this corrosive force, to contain it and to quarantine it before it literally does destroy the entire world. Well, in the course of this research, folks, I mean, honestly, I'm just overwhelmed with this story that literally not another living soul on the entire freaking planet has picked up on, that I know of. And, you know, I was telling my beautiful, beloved wife, the other night, we were talking about this, and I said, you know, I find this very, not as much disappointing as I do disconcerting. I don't understand how people can't see this gorilla in the room the size of King Kong. You know, all they're focused on are all these little mice running around on the floor, And they don't see this King Kong who is hollering, beating his chest, stomping up and down, tearing the place up. And of course, what I'm talking about here is the diabolic fury that is fueling this drive to get rid of Trump before he can put a cage around the beast. How is it that other people who are a heck of a lot smarter than yours truly, whose political and historical 2020 vision is much better than mine, how do they not see this? And this is what we're going to be talking about, folks, and in subsequent programs. Because, and this isn't just, you know, for aggrandizing myself, folks, I want all of you out there listening to this to take this information, to take this analysis, to take this research that you're going to hear on this program. And assuming that that you are simpatico with all of it, to take it out, to take it to your friends, your family members, your neighbors, and as they are asking questions, wanting to know why their world is literally it's rotting away as a result of this corrosive force, I want you to take the pieces of this puzzle that for reasons which I don't understand, I have somehow been able to isolate, and I want you to put those pieces into the puzzle, the incomplete picture for your friends and family members and all the rest of that, and to begin this discussion, expand on this discussion, okay? Because simply saying that it's radical leftists, communists, Bolsheviks, Democrats, and all of the rest of that, it doesn't go far enough. It's not enough. And that's the hope we have, as I said earlier in my very long-winded discussion here. You know, the battle is not over yet. It's not over. And our job is to help out the one man who, if there's any chance at all of us getting the noose off of our neck, it's this man and what he is trying to do. Anyway, I want you to think about that sound bite that you heard, what Baker said, because this has been the policy of every president going back to Nixon. Nixon, Ford, Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, even Barack Obama, okay? And in particular, folks, and I'm just going to leave you with this thought. We're going to close the shop doors here in just a minute or so. The last thing that Baker said when he said we are going to base this peace thing here on UN Resolution 242. Now, folks, I'm not a fan of the UN. Don't get me wrong. Okay? I'm not polishing the UN's cherries here, okay? I'm just offering a cold clinical analysis, historical and political analysis of what's going on. Okay, Baker talking about 242. This is the exact, those three numbers, 242, was the formula that all of these previous presidents utilized in trying to formulate their peace plans. And it was the use of that those three numbers, 242, which led to their downfall, okay? Because what happened is, UN Resolution 242, what does it do? It calls on Israel, on the Jews, to give back everything that they stole in the 1967 war, which would be Gaza, it would be the Golan Heights, it would have been the Sinai Peninsula, and it would have been the West Bank, okay? Every president that tried, who went down this road of trying to base this peace deal on that UN resolution failed because there's no way in hell that they're going to give that back. And they'll blow up the world with their nukes before they do. Now, the one president, folks, and this is a very important thing that I want you to think about in the next week until we get together. The one president, and every president, folks, every president since 1967 has to some degree, greater or lesser, some degree, attempted to bring a fire hose to this fire in the Middle East and to put it out before it winds up burning down the entire planet. Every president who went forward with this, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Clinton, Obama, every one of them based their firefighting plans on 242. The one president who completely broke with that idea was Donald J. Trump. He looked at it. This is why he was surrounded by all of these Hebrews, his son-in-law, the two bankruptcy lawyers, Green something and Friedman or something like, a couple of them, okay. One of them, these were the people who helped him put together his deal of the century. And they, understanding the way that corrosive mindset works, were the ones who said, look, if we really want this thing to work, we have to abandon completely the idea of 242. Because that, when soon as you say 242, all of these various groups within, Mundus Judaicus, okay, the Jewish world, left, right, middle, north, east, west, south, who just are constantly squabbling and fighting with each other over the difference between six of one and half a dozen of the other. The one thing that snaps, like your finger snapping, brings them to attention and brings them all together is when some goy leader talks about forcing them to give up the land that they stole in 67. Now they're a united force instead of being left among themselves, squabbling and fighting and clawing and biting and everything else. And this is why every one of those presidents not only failed in their attempts to bring a water hose to this fire, but in some degree had their political careers destroyed. Trump abandoned that entirely. He said to them, okay, Sinai has already gone back to the Egyptians via Carter and Camp David. Sinai went back to the Egyptians. Gaza went back to the Palestinians, okay? Okay, so the Golan Heights, you get to keep it, okay? It's yours. The West Bank settlements, they're yours. You get to keep them, but you're not going any further. That's it. That's it. Now, the brilliance of Trump's plan, okay, as inadequate as it is in bringing real justice to the Palestinians, is that for the Jews to oppose this, to oppose his plan, because what he's saying is, look, everything you got, you got. Everything you have right now is yours. Nobody's going to take anything away from you. You've got the Golan. You've got all of your West Bank settlements. We'll even give you Jerusalem. But you're not going any further than that. Now, the brilliance of his plan is that now for the Jews to oppose this, what they have to do is that they have to come out and they have to admit to the world that they intend to steal everything, because that's what their religion tells them, everything in the Middle East, and that the entire Israel thing was from the very beginning, all of their explanations and lies about how they just want a little piece of land to lay their weary head and all the rest of that, that it was a lie. That this was done in order to steal the entirety of the Middle East, which they believe to be theirs according to the teachings of their religion, and they don't want to have that kind of conversation with the world. Because if they come out in the open and say, look, you fought 30 years of wars in Iraq, beginning in Iraq, and then off to Afghanistan, and then Libya was destroyed, and Syria was destroyed. All of this was done in order to facilitate us taking over the entire Middle East. That completely, it's like taking the lipstick off the pig. And now what have you got there? You've got a pig. And they don't want that to happen. 90% of their power is rooted in their ability to hypnotize the Gentile masses. And if they come out and are forced to come out in the open and to move against Trump out in the open, this is why all of you, all of the people out, all of these idiots out there, you know, who call themselves political, geopolitical analysts, and they say, oh, look at Trump and Netanyahu, two bosom buddies, two peas in a pod. Look at them smiling and laughing and hugging and shaking hands and all of the rest of that. No. No. Netanyahu views Trump as his mortal enemy, and he has for decades. For decades, because he has known all along what Trump intends to do in the Middle East. And what you see on TV and read about in the newspaper about how great of friends they appear to be, this is nothing but a real-life political manifestation of the relationship that existed between Michael Corleone and Hyman Roth in the second Godfather movie, where they spoke very affectionately with each other and to each other and all the rest of that, but throughout the entirety of the movie, they were moving against each other and planning for one of them to kill the other. And that is exactly what has been going on, ladies and gentlemen, for the last 4 years. All of this business, all of this business with the media, with the impeachment, with the pandemic, with the collapsing economy, all of this, not only would it have been stopped dead in its tracks by Benjamin Netanyahu, if it in any way worked against his interests, it would never have been allowed to get started. So for all of those geniuses out there, self-declared geniuses and geopolitical analysts and all the rest of that who say, well, the Jews control the media and the Jews control Congress and they control the U.S. government, but somehow they just lost control of all of that with Trump and they just weren't able... No. Sorry. They either control it or they don't. And if they do control it, then the question that has to be asked and explored and then answered rationally and accurately is, if they control the media, then why was the media so against him? If they control Congress, then why was Trump impeached? And if they can't come up with a rational answer to those questions, folks, then what you're dealing with is somebody who simply does not possess either the intellectual capacity to come up with the right answer, or else you're dealing with somebody who is simply driven by their emotions and they won't see the facts and state the facts as they are right in front of them. Anyway, folks, this is what we are going to be talking about in subsequent programs. I'm not going to go into the forensics of the election that's being stolen. In my opinion, that is just a repeat of the failed strategies of the past that surrounded the JFK assassination. That's why there was only one guy out of all of the thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, or even millions of people who investigated the JFK assassination. There was only one guy, our friend Mike Piper, who came up with the right answer. And it's because he didn't focus on all the forensics, you know, the angle of the bullet this way and, all of these other things, including these crazy ideas that some of our people have put out, that Jackie Kennedy ordered the hit of her own husband so she could run off and do something. I don't know. I just the craziness that's out there. Likewise with, all the forensic details involving all of these other things that the corrosive force was behind. The attack on the USS Liberty, the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, getting into all of these nitty-gritty, hair-splitting little details goes nowhere. The discussion that needs to take place, okay, just like the crime scene, the murder scene that I discussed earlier. You know, you walk in, you see this person, they're on the floor with a gunshot wound to their head and they got a gun in their hand. Okay. First question that has to be asked is, if this was a murder, then who had the motive to do it? Did they have the means to do it? But that's the first question, who benefits? And that's why I'm not going to spend really any time talking about discussing or parsing or microanalyzing the obvious vote fraud that is going on right now, but rather to talk about who is doing it, specifically, not just the Democrats, not just the radical left, but rather that corrosive force, and more importantly, why? Why would they do something like this? So anyway, folks, that's it for today. I did do a program yesterday, but I just didn't like it. So I wasted an hour of my time doing a program that I didn't like, but that's okay, because that's what separates me from them, in that I am, before I put something out there for public consumption, I'm going to make sure that to the best of my ability, I'm going to hit the target as close to bullseye as possible. So again, anybody out there who is interested or in the position of helping out with the costs associated with this, and folks, I'll be honest with you, you know, we're not in the same situation that we were years ago, okay? Now it is a much more dangerous situation. We have professional terrorists out there, Antifa and other people, who are being paid, who are being trained, who are being armed, okay? It's not just threatening emails or nasty intelligence reports appearing on the ADL website or anything like that, okay? As problematic as those things can be. This is the real deal now. This is the real deal. We're dealing with people who really are dangerous and who have already demonstrated, especially in the last 6 months, the extreme lengths to which they are willing to go in order to vanquish their enemies. And so I would plead to those of you out there listening to this program, please help us out with just a little bit. Okay, it doesn't have to be a fortune, just a little bit so that we can keep this thing going, because, you know, some of us who are living in the spotlight of all this, okay, we don't have the benefit, the insularity, the protection of anonymity that those of you out there listening to this program do, okay? Some of us out there are invested in this thing in a very serious way. So please, sort of, kind of, make it worth our while by sending in something to help us cover the costs and make the the effort worth it. And you can do that by emailing me at, again, theuglytruthradioprogram@gmail.com, and I will set you on the path to truth and enlightenment. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. Let's see, an hour and almost 20 minutes. My goodness. Good being with you. And remember, folks, it ain't over yet. It ain't over till it's over, and until it's over, let's just keep wailing away at this thing. And who knows, maybe we'll catch a break, and that higher power responsible for all creation will say, let's help these poor fools out with some reinforcement. So until that time, folks, stay safe, stay sharp, and we'll see you again.